It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
This is Jasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
What's the plan at quarterback right now?
We don't have one right now. I'm going to go out here, practice today. We have individuals and a little bit of work we're going to do. I'm going to see the health of the guys. First of all, see where Dwayne's at, and I'll make a decision shortly.
So you expect to make a decision today?
I don't know yet. I might just wait till Sunday at 1 o'clock and just figure it out then.
All right, there's Redskins head coach and moron, Jay Gruden, who I'm surprised is even still the head coach of the Redskins, Patriots opponent tomorrow down in D.C., or Landover, Maryland, not even close to D.C., but be that as it may. That was earlier in the week when he's joking around saying, I don't know who I'm going to be starting quarterback this Sunday. Well, now we have an answer. It is going to be Colt McCoy, who I've now said for like the 20th time in the last 4 days, Chris, I literally didn't even know he was still in the league. I didn't at all. It's been since, the last 10 years he's been around, like coming out of Texas. He's just been this journeyman backup. He's actually been a little bit of a gamer. Didn't he steal a win like 5-6 years ago when people, Kirk Cousins went down and all those idiot Redskins fans were like, this is going to be the guy. Colt McCoy is the answer.
And then
he got
concussed, didn't he? And like, that was like a big deal, like with the concussion spotter and everything. Yeah, no, I mean, obviously every time I think of him, I just think, man, like the most Texas quarterback name ever.
Oh, sure.
Colt McCoy.
Yeah. A couple of six guns on the side.
Yeah, exactly.
But Dwayne Haskins, who they draft out of Ohio State, who I'm not a big believer in. And obviously Jay Gruden isn't either because he's just refusing to start him. I have to think that little tyrant owner.
Yeah.
You got to start him. You got to start him. But either way, Gruden's going to be out tomorrow, Monday rather, or maybe immediately after the game on Sunday. Doesn't even get to do the press conference. Drastic, I know. But he's going to be out. And now, something else that I think will cement that, and this sucks that this happened to him. If you don't know, there's a video that popped up online.
Oh, this is good.
Overnight, a pair of videos containing images of Jay Gruden. One shows him smoking weed, apparently, while someone is chanting his name. And it's funny. I feel for him in it because he's got this look on his face like, what are you doing? Why are you recording this? And he's a better man than me because if I was in this type of situation like he was, I'd try to knock the phone out of this idiot's hand wherever he is. Like, get out of here. Like, you're trying to catch me at a bad time. And then the other one, he's, you know, trying to work some game.
Yeah.
Sitting on the ground talking to some girl
that looks
like she's like in her early 20s.
Well, in the smoking one, it looks like he's talking to this girl as well.
Yeah.
So
he's definitely trying to lay some groundwork here. And,
yeah, he's trying to lay lay some pipe here.
Yeah, exactly.
John Gruden. Jay Gruden.
But not a good look. And it's just, it's something else that, it's funny, I'm usually not the biggest conspiracy theory guy, Chris, but like I have to think that, as devious as Daniel Snyder is, like this is just more ammunition to help exacerbate the firing of Jay Gruden come Monday, and this is a bad look for the team, so we can't hang on to him. Like, we don't believe in Jay anymore from a football standpoint and the job that he's done on the field and off the field. How can we condone this kind of behavior? Is he married?
It's a great question. I'm not sure.
Either way, they got some ammo here. And overall, it's just another thing that just shows we're living in the dumbest time in recorded history because people just can't leave people the hell alone.
Everybody feels like they have a right to invade your privacy.
Right, the greatest gift you can give to other human beings is to just not bother them, really, and just leave them the hell alone and let them live their lives. So Jay Gruden going to be out here. But just, you know, not a great look. And
I actually have more respect for Jay Gruden after seeing these videos. I mean, 52 years old, you're out there, you know, still spitting game, like,
I guess,
still doing your thing.
Yeah, if he's single. So, but either way, like, it's just, it's that team is a mess. It's amazing. Like, you're old enough, too, to remember that. Even if you're talking like the late 80s, early 90s, and that championship they won with Mark Rippon in 92, like, ooh, this was one of the...
Sorry to interrupt you. Just reading his Redskins bio here, Jay Gruden and his wife, Sherry, have three sons and a grandson. Grandpa Gruden out there doing his thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you're working for that team, guys, come on. Like, you gotta, it's going to take you over the edge. That team, that owner... I don't condone any of that stuff, but come on now.
Oh, yeah, no, like, it'll drive you drive you to drink and do things you normally wouldn't do.
Like, the guy didn't want Haskins.
Yeah.
He didn't want him.
Right.
It's true. It's true.
But that's the thing, too, and I think, Joe, you're also old enough to remember, like, this was, it's just crazy to me what's become of this franchise. Like, they were one of the more storied franchises, not just in the NFL, but in all of sports. And they've since, you know, since Snyder has taken over the last 20 years, they're a laughingstock. They're a disaster.
So I'll tell you guys a funny story. Brendan Merriweather comes on Touch and Rich every week.
Yep.
I just wanted to ask about the Trent Williams situation. And he goes, you know, when I come to think about it, all my injuries happened when I was in Washington. And he like, this, like, light turned on that, like, oh, my God, like, all my
everything
injuries were while
happened.
I was there. And he said that he still talks to Trent Rich, but Trent Williams. But it sounds like there's, like, an issue there internally with the medical staff. And it's not just Trent Williams. It's other players in the past.
And, wow.
I don't know. Just that little conversation
that's
that we had
really
with him. He said that that's where all his injuries happened. And, you know, they ruined people. Like Robert Griffin III, he got
totally
ruined.
Oh,
yeah.
Totally.
Absolutely.
And Shanahan was one of the greatest coaches ever, right? Couldn't even fix that situation.
It's a poorly, poorly run franchise. I mean, I've always thought, like, you know, if Mr. Burns owned an NFL team, it would be Daniel Snyder. Like, that's seriously, like, what he is. Yeah. And you can't you just see him doing the Mr. Burns fingers as
he goes
into the safe to pull out the thumb drive of this video of 52-year-old Gruden spitting game at 25-year-olds?
Find me the video of Jay Gruden trying to pipe these hoes.
Yeah, yes, sir. You know,
if I have him fired on Monday morning...
Whatever you need, sir.
You know who Smithers is? It's Bruce Allen down there.
Right.
Bruce Allen is Smithers.
But this really might be, this might show how low it's really gotten for the Redskins here. And I just retweeted this. This from, Rosenberg Radio, who does the Michael Kay show. It works with Ebro in the morning in New York. This is how bad it's got for the Redskins. Tickets for tomorrow's game, they're selling them on Groupon. $17 is what these things start at. You can get into this game. That's insane for any NFL game. I mean, because it's such a draw. You want to go, you tailgate. Usually, you, you know, you figure you're going to pay at least $40-$50 at least for a seat in the 300s, even if you're going one of the dregs of the league. They're selling tickets for $17 on Groupon for tomorrow's game. That's brutal. Like, you know, you are one of the worst, if not the worst teams and franchises in the league if you're having to hawk your tickets on Groupon.
I mean, that cooking class you went to would be more than $17 on Groupon.
It was $100 for the wife and I. It was $200 overall.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Might have got a little bit overcharged.
Who was conducting this thing? Gordon Ramsay?
No, not at all.
Oh, my God.
Still smell of onions and garlic,
$200 for that?
But it's a shame of what has happened. Because, again, like, just in terms of age, you remember, like, growing up, like, it was the Redskins. They were one of the marquee franchises. The Steelers, the Cowboys.
Definitely.
The Redskins were in that conversation. Now they're removing seats twice in the last 5 to 6 years because they can't fill the damn place. Locally, people hate Dan Snyder, and rightfully so, and they want him out.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like
he's
not going
to give it up. The controversy
over
the name, which he refuses to change.
The stadium sucks.
Based
on everything that I've heard, it's one of the worst tailgating experiences. They actually charge people to go to preseason practices in Richmond, Virginia.
In Richmond, Virginia, yeah, they
like,
do.
Just one of the great grifts, you know. I'm old enough to feel like it's a bit of a shame what happened with them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously in the nation, I mean, if you've ever been down there when they were halfway decent, the best way to sort of put it in perspective is that for sports fans in that area, the Redskins, the Washington football team, whatever we're going to call them, they're like the Red Sox. You know, that's what it would be like if somebody took over the Red Sox and ran them completely into the ground. And I know people are critical of ownership, and you can make the jokes you want about the ownership here, but they've, you know, won 4 championships. Imagine if the equivalent of, like, Victor Kiam bought the Red Sox from John Henry and Tom Werner and just ran the franchise into the ground. They were perpetual losers. They were a laughingstock. That's really what's happened. And then refused to sell. And that's what happened with Daniel Snyder, who is probably the worst owner in sports. It's either Snyder or it's Dolan with the Knicks. It's one or the other.
Cam and Taunton on the fall of the Redskins. Go ahead, Cam.
You know, Jim, it's unbelievable because I remember I told you this was initially going to be my road game this year, and then I looked into it. Like, first of all, apparently this stadium is in the middle of absolutely nowhere. Is that true?
Yeah.
Landover, Maryland, yeah.
So that's streak one, and then I realized, like, I can't with good conscience give this dirtbag money. it's unbelievable, and you know, you were right. I mean, I know a guy who used to work in PR down there, and, you know, apparently when Daniel Snyder walks in the room, people, like, stand up because they feel like the president's walking in the room because they're that scared of him. It's unbelievable what that organization has become. And it's like, you're going to look at the game tomorrow and look at the crowd. It's going to be all Patriots fans. They've lost the D.C. region. It's unbelievable what that jackass has done to that team.
No doubt, Cam. Thanks for the call. There was a column in the Washington Post right before the season started that, you know, detailed just some of the inner workings of Daniel Snyder's operation and how, like Cam said, like people like cower in fear of this guy. And there was a quote from an anonymous source, because no one wants to say their name because they'll be fired and probably, you know, gutted and hung if Daniel Snyder found out who it was, that said that Daniel Snyder, paraphrasing here, but it was something along the lines of Daniel Snyder acts like how a rich child probably thinks a rich person is supposed to act. Like, he's just a little tyrant.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, I, you know, I've told you, like, I've done a road game every year for, like, the last 14, 15 years, and when I saw the road schedule this year, it was like, ugh, not really much to choose from. I generally like the Mid-Atlantic. I like going to D.C., but, like Cam said, I'm not contributing to Dan Snyder's pocketbook. I'm not giving my money to that guy. And that stadium's really in the middle of nowhere. Like, if you want to try to stay in D.C. and try to get there, the traffic is some of the worst in the nation. Like, good luck. So good luck to you, pal, when you fly there after today's show.
Yeah, it's going to be a long drive from Georgetown, Jim.
Couple open lines you want to join us, 617-779-0985 on anything Tom Brady and his complaining about the offense. This game tomorrow, really not much to talk about there. Although there is something offensively I do want to bring up about this team, and that's the running game and why they haven't used Damian Harris. We'll get to that next. Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
It's going to be a challenge down there. They do a good job. And try to go down there and play well.
Yeah, they got a lot of explosive players, you know. They 0-4, but they don't. When you watch the film, it doesn't look like it. They, you know, they right there. You know, we gotta play good football to beat them.
That's Tom Brady and Patriots cornerback Stephon Gilmore lying about the Washington Redskins.
A tough challenge they're going to face tomorrow. My God.
This game's going to suck. Just stay healthy. That's all. The last time they went down there, Deion Lewis blew out his knee. Is that when I recall that?
I thought that game was here.
Oh, no, it was here. That's right. Yeah.
I think the last time they went down there was when Gronk decided he was going to use Ryan Kerrigan as a coat and then just shed him like a cape and then just threw him off.
Yeah.
I was at that game.
Remember Gerard Mayo had a touchdown in the end zone. Interception.
Yeah,
in the
that
end
like
zone.
Sealed
seal
it.
Game.
I'll never forget I'll never forget that, because Ryan Kerrigan is a player I really admire and I'd love to see him be a Patriot. And he tried to tackle Gronk, and it was literally like Gronk had walked into a Halloween party with a cape that weighed 265 pounds, and he just tossed it off and kept going. It was unbelievable.
So I got a question about Damian Harris. Maybe you can help me out, Chris. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, at the time when they drafted him in the third round, I thought it was redundant because they were pretty deep at running back. But you were like, I don't know. Like, he was good at Alabama. It didn't really make any sense. And then he looked pretty damn good in the preseason, at least at Alabama, and a little bit that you saw in the preseason. Great runner. Certainly can break tackles. Why they draft him if they're not going to use him? This is what I've seen it a couple of places, but I'm reading from Heath Cummings, CBS Sports, blue check mark, so you got to trust him, I guess. But per Sports Info Solutions, whatever that is, Sony Michel's broken tackle percentage this year is zero. He's not broken one tackle this season.
I find
not
a one. A little hard to believe.
Well, you know, it's on the internet, blue check mark. I go, this is gospel. It's real.
Okay.
So that being said, one of the things that Damian Harris, at least in my eyes, he can do is break tackles. He's only been available, I think, once. All these other games, he's been a healthy scratch. I don't know. Feels like you need some help there. Anytime that you have Michelle in the backfield, it's obviously predictable. They're going to be handing off to him because they won't throw to him. Like, again, why draft him if they aren't going to use him?
Yeah, it is a little strange. Now, obviously, that's a position where they have depth. And I think that given what they're dealing with, the tight end and wide receiver, that in order to be in a position to augment the passing game, they need the running backs that can catch the ball. And that's been Burkhead and James White. So I think that when you look at that, and Sony Michel's the primary running back, and Brandon Bolden's going to be active because of special teams, it's kind of hard for Harris to find a way onto the game day roster. My other question at this point would be, is there some sort of concern with him in terms of protection? And I haven't heard that, but I'm just guessing, because I feel like, to your point, just to try and spark the running game, you'd put him in there if you felt comfortable with him protecting Brady. But that's a big one for Ivan Fears, the running back coach. You have to be able to hold up in pass protection, and maybe they're not quite sure. And you don't want to put a young guy like that in there, and then all of a sudden you have a 2008 situation, you know, Bernard Pollard situation with Brady.
Let's go to Andy and Lynn, who has a thought on the once proud Washington Redskins. Hello, Andy.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I went to Virginia Tech, and we played West Virginia in FedEx Field. And my friends and his family, instead of tailgating at the stadium, we went to a restaurant, and the restaurant was too busy, so we walked over and tailgated at a Chuck E. Cheese instead.
Oh, that's
wow.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but bad for anyone that's ever traveled there, been there. Even Bob Soucy, voice of the Patriots along Scott Zolak, said it's the worst box to call a game in the NFL. Like, they changed it so you're in a corner, you can barely see anything. Like, it's just, ugh. And it's gross that, you know, they're already clamoring for a new stadium anyway, and they built it, what, I think in 96 or something like that? It's not like it's that old.
No, it's not that old a stadium, but it became antiquated pretty quickly. It's kind of like the White Sox stadium. Like, it got built sort of right before the new wave, and it quickly became kind of antiquated. And, yeah, I mean, I've been there a couple of times. It is not good.
Matt in Southie has a question for Joe Murray. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, guys. Hey, Joe. Thanks for the podcast. It's great. Quick question for you. What are your overall thoughts about buy-in points? When do you do it? When do you not do it? What's your overall strategy with buy-in points? Thanks.
So normally, it's you got to pay the vig or the juice. So to dumb it down for everybody, every bet's 110 to win $100. So let's say you got the Patriots last week were 7.5. I would buy the point in that situation to get it at -7, but you got to pay an extra $20 or $200. So I would do that only at 3.5 situations or in 7.5 situations. That's really it. But it depends. Like today, Auburn and Florida, the line is 3. Might want to buy the 2.5 because it's probably going to be a low scoring game. So
I'm such a novice with this. Can you can only buy it down, right?
You can buy it down or
up.
Yeah, or if you want to get the dog, you can bet it up as well.
Okay.
So, like, again, if it's somebody's 3, you can buy it to 4. Just like the other night in that Seattle Rams game. I had a friend who goes, I'm going to buy the 2. I don't know why. I'm buying the half a point, an extra $200 or whatever. And he ended up winning the bet because he had the 2 instead of the 1.5. So.
Wow. By the way, just as a quick aside in that game, I thought that was a huge mistake by McVay to go for 2 at the end of the third quarter.
Yeah. And that, it was too early.
Yeah, it was too early. It was too, and they wouldn't, you know, they would have been in a position where they missed that kick and you just go to overtime.
Dan in Cranston, you're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello, Dan.
Hey, what's up, fellas? Real quick on the Redskins. I think you're old enough, I'm not sure. The early 80s, Cowboys, Redskins, you know, the John Riggins, Hogs,
yeah.
Art Monk against Danny White and
Art
the Cowboys. Oh, that was when football was football. I sound like an old bastard. But, the Patriots stunk, so there was nothing really else to watch. And that was just that at its peak was like Auburn, Alabama, Florida, Florida State. That type of level, I think, in terms of a rivalry. Just those two teams. Even if the one wasn't good, it's just so fun to watch those two.
Definitely.
So as for Kyrie Brady, here's my problem. Now, he's the unquestioned leader of the team, right? Everybody knows that. Put yourself in Jacoby Myers, Nicole Harry, put yourself in their shoes, right? You're sitting there. How do you feel with the stuff he's saying? I mean, this guy's supposed to be a leader, and he's more about I mean, it's just not – why would these guys want to play for him? If you got them privately, what do you think they would say about him right now?
Well, Dan, and thanks for the call. If anything, I don't think it would be anger. I think it would maybe a little bit of disappointment. I would think if you're Jacoby Myers, any young wide receiver that comes into the league, you look at Brady as I think most fans do, in awe. You know, like, it's the greatest of all time. It's an honor to have him even try to attempt a pass towards me. But to hear him talk about them like they're lesser than, that's got to be a little bit disappointing, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I mean, you could look at it and also say it's sort of, you know, tough love. I mean, he's saying, you know, there's only so much I can do to get you guys up to speed. The rest of it's on you. Maybe he wants him to work a little harder. Look, is it ideal? No, it's not ideal. I'll acknowledge that that some of that messaging, some of the way that his message was conveyed sounded Marino-esque, which makes me uncomfortable. But at the same time, I look at it and I just feel like overall, I feel like we're sort of micromanaging the argument and picking on Brady when really the 30,000 foot view is the position's been mismanaged. Like, why are we even talking about Jacoby Myers and Gunnar Olszewski? We shouldn't be talking about those. It shouldn't come to that with a 42-year-old quarterback and a team that's loaded and a chance to win a 7th Super Bowl. And it's been like this for a couple of years now. I mean, go back to last year and what they were trying to do with Jordan Matthews and Kenny Britt and Eric Decker. I mean, they really got bailed out. And I wrote this at the time. They really got bailed out when the Browns got fed up with Josh Gordon and Josh Gordon was suddenly available. Like, it's not a viable, feasible, wise game plan to go into these years and be like, yeah, we're going to have to add a receiver after cut down during the year. Let's hope a guy who's really talented either shoots his way out of town or messes up and we can get him at a bargain basement rate. Because that's literally been the strategy the last 2 years with Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown. And if you put yourself in Brady's shoes, that has to be kind of frustrating. Because even when the talented guys get here, it's not like he has training camp to work with them. Yeah. It's like even if you get Emmanuel Sanders now, Emmanuel Sanders is showing up in October. And everything becomes expedited and condensed for the quarterback to get on the same page. It's, I think we all get frustrated. We all know we have jobs to do and responsibilities to others. But I think we all get a little frustrated when somebody is artificially throwing obstacles in there and making your job harder when they don't have to. And I think that's where his frustration comes from. Because you have somebody, the team, making his job harder when it doesn't have to be that way.
I have a recommendation for the Boston Red Sox after they stupidly decided to raise their ticket prices, that announcement that they made earlier this week. We'll get to that right after the Sports Hub headlines with Cheryl Murray. Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 of Sports Hub.
We've compiled lists and we've started to discuss different names. We have not. I want to offer up some more clarification or information. I think John and Tom mentioned this Friday, but we have not contacted any organizations for permission to speak to any candidates as of this morning.
So that's Red Sox president and CEO Sam Kennedy earlier this week. What a disaster that season was for that team. I don't even know. You know, that might not even be the right word. Because if it was truly, like, a disaster you would feel angry about. And there was just nothing but apathy surrounding the Red Sox this year. And rightfully so. Because, you know, they didn't care. They obviously didn't care after the team didn't add to them and make those babies happy around the trade deadline. Oh, you're not going to help us out? And then they just completely waved the white flag. But they announced the big thing that came out this week is that the Red Sox are going to raise ticket prices. And so here's my suggestion to the Red Sox brass going forward. Before you hire a GM, and that's what Kennedy was talking about, we're still looking. We got to try to find a new president of baseball ops. Who's it going to be? Theo doesn't want the job, so we're trying, you know, we got a list. We're checking it twice. But before you do that, and you hire a GM, or you make any trades, you move on from Mookie Betts, or whatever this offseason, anything that's going to happen in terms of baseball ops, hire a public relations professional or like a communications professional, because this team's so tone deaf. Here, their decision making over the last month and a half, it blows my mind that they said that they're going to raise ticket prices after they fired Dave Dombrowski at midnight on a Sunday, the same night as the ring ceremony and opening night for the Patriots. David Ortiz throws out the first pitch in a meaningless weeknight game. It's not announced until like the last minute. David Ortiz gives an interview to discuss his recovery from being shot and those rumors that surrounded everything about that. But only a select few beat writers and not any journalists are actually allowed to attend that little, you know, PR stunt from Ortiz. And we're all happy that he's healthy and, you know, survived the assassination attempt. But that thing was a crock. They don't really offer a comment after they fire Dombrowski. And then John Henry and Tom Werner hold a press conference to discuss the state and direction of the team going forward and say they're going to, they're going to cut payroll for next year. But there's no cameras. You can't live stream the thing. Again, it's handpicked beat people that get to go cover this thing. And then
they didn't even say they were going to cut payroll. I mean, like John Henry said it, and then immediately Werner walked it back.
Yeah. And then, again, after they announced they're going to cut payroll, they announced they're going to re-raise ticket prices. They do not get it. And I know, look, there's probably only so much you want to say because, you know, John Henry owns the Globe, and I get that.
Well, I mean, Chris, I wrote a column on it this week. I mean, I'm not disagreeing. I mean, I think a lot of your points are valid.
But they just, like, how The timing? They don't get it. They absolutely positively don't get it.
The messaging is bad.
It is.
I don't dispute that at all. And again, I sort of wrote about this week. I think they have to understand their fan base, Jim. And their fan base is extremely knowledgeable, very sophisticated. They're going to be able to see through intellectual countermeasures and half-truths. And so just shoot them straight. You're going to cut payroll because you need to reset the luxury tax. You still hope to be competitive. And oh, by the way, we're going to raise the ticket prices. Just shoot them straight. You know, instead, it's kind of like, to your point,
everything's
like,
spin.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote this in the column. I was saying, you know, the spin rate coming out of there, coming out of Fenway Park, is higher than on a Brandon Workman curveball at this point. It's just spin, spin, spin. And it's like, well, we might do this or we might not. Like, you know, we might have to get rid of Mookie Betts or we might keep Mookie and JD Martinez. It's like they just can't sort of shoot you straight at this point. And I think that's a problem. You know, I think if this were the Patriots, it wouldn't be. People would just swallow it. Because I think people are sort of trained and ingrained at this point not to question the Patriots. But questioning the Red Sox is part of being a New Englander, right? I mean, it's just what people do. So people are going to look at it with a jaundiced eye and read through it. And I think when you're feeding them something that they don't feel like is authentic or genuine or 100% accurate, when you feel like there's like rhetorical cover, you know, being created, then I think it just creates more resentment than if you were just straightforward with people, shot them straight. They'd be upset, but at the end of the day, they'd tolerate it. What they're not going to tolerate is you telling them one thing when they know you plan to do something else.
It's just, it's a bad product that they put out there, and they won't shoot it straight. And again, people can see right through it. It's just, I would think that they would get it at this point, but they don't. They just keep falling all over themselves. Every move that they've made recently, or just the way that they've handled everything from a PR standpoint, has just been stupid. It blows my mind. Like, it doesn't feel like they even have a plan right now. Are they going to be going internal with the GM? Are they still trying to hold out hope for what, Friedman yeah. with the LA Dodgers?
Think they have a plan. And I was thinking about this last night. Because I'm like, man, this thing's going really slowly. And then I started looking at the playoff teams. And I was like, yeah, you mentioned Friedman with the Dodgers, right? Both guys, Chaim Bloom and Eric Neander with the Rays. The Rays are still in it. Derek Falvey, who's from Lynn, my hometown, is with the Twins. The Twins are still in it. So the more I think about it, I think that a lot of their preferred candidates are not available because their teams are still in the playoffs, which actually would be a good thing. That's the way I'm reading the tea leaves there. I think if they were just going to promote Eddie Romero, they'd just do it. But my concern is that one of these teams goes deep into the playoffs and it delays the whole process, and then the World Series ends and you throw some guy in there and he's like, wait, what do I have to do with Mookie Betts? What, Martinez opted? Hold on. What am I doing here? Like, my wife and I are just trying to find a place to live. I need to do what? Like, the guy's not going to, or woman, is not going to have enough time to get their feet on the ground, assess the organization in what is really a pivotal offseason. So that's sort of my concern. It's not a criticism. I like the people they're going after at this point because I'm reading the tea leaves and saying they're going after these experienced people who have teams in the playoffs, but everything's going to be accelerated whoever lands in that chair.
Yeah, I tell you what, though, like I'm now doing everything in my power to, like, in terms of my rooting interest to spite them. Like, whatever makes the Red Sox look the worst, that's what I want. So that's why I'm actually rooting for Tampa. I don't think they have much of a chance against the Houston Astros, but Tampa in your division, $60 million payroll, which is the equivalent of Chris Sale and David Price, what they're getting paid from this team. If they were to win the World Series, oh boy, would that make them look bad. And it's, if not them, then the New York Yankees, who beat up on the Twins, who are a complete waste of time, much like the Oakland A's in the playoffs. So far, though, the bit that I've watched, as much as I will trash baseball during the regular season because it's interminable, 162 yep. games is far too much, the game's too slow, blah, 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 blah. I do love the playoffs. The one-game playoff is awesome, as long as it doesn't involve the A's. But the National League one was tremendous the other night.
Yeah, it was great drama.
And the schadenfreude of rooting against Felger and his Brewers, that was fun. But if it doesn't involve the A's and the Twins, who are a complete waste of everybody's time, it's been a pretty good product.
I think I retweeted this. It was from ESPN Stats and Info. I think the Twins have lost 14 straight playoff games.
That is correct, yes. Yeah.
That's unbelievable to me. 14 straight playoff losses.
Yeah, and the A's have one playoff win since 2000. One.
Ugh.
Like, get out of my face. You're just going to get out of here. Like, you're a neat little story and the small market, low payroll, and, oh, you have a good regular season. You fail time and time and time and time again in the playoffs.
So I might be contradicting myself because I'm saying the people they're waiting for are still in the playoffs. But just to throw it out there as a hypothetical, given that, how would you feel about Billy Bean? And do you think there's any part of Billy Bean, I know he has an ownership stake with the A's, but that looks at that stat that you just said and thinks about what he said in Moneyball, which is, my S don't work in the playoffs. And maybe he wants to try it with a little cushion, with a little pad, with a big market payroll. Would you be down for that?
No. I'm stealing someone's line. It was a great tweet that someone hit at me earlier this week when we were talking about it on Felgren Mass. He's baseball Marvin Lewis. Like, you can put together a good season here and there. You can get to the playoffs. You'll never win in the playoffs.
I just disagree because of where he's at. Like, again,
it's just the small market thing.
Yeah, I mean, they need to develop talent, right? So, like, you know, maybe they find something in a Sam Travis if they played him for 162 games. Like, that's what Boston needs to do. If they want to keep guys but also, you know, save on the payroll, they need a guy that can come in here and do that. I still think Theo can be that guy, but what are you going to give him? My whole thing with Bean is, like, haven't the Red Sox won in spite of people? Like, whether it's been Ben Cherington or John Farrell, like, they've won in spite of people. So, like, Billy Bean can come here and they can still win in spite of him.
I would take Bean, because I'll tell you, this is one thing I think Bean's good at. And I look at Bean a little bit like Andrew Friedman, who left the Rays and then went to the Dodgers. And you want to see what it's like to do it in the real world, right? And the thing about Bean that I think he's done pretty well throughout the course of his career is essentially play the player stock market, right? You know, he's pretty good at, you know, selling high on guys and they get what they can get. And then he picks these futures and a lot of them end up panning out, and then he does it again. He can sell. He's good at that and keeping it sort of sustainable. Now, the A's did have some lean years in there, no question about it. But that's almost baked in, built into the way they run that franchise. But given where you're at right now, where you're in a transition phase and you need to probably sell off assets and get stuff back that can help you, he is documented to be proficient at that.
Yeah, I understand it. It's also my personal bias that I think that book and movie are wildly overrated.
I've never seen the movie.
He helped usher in the era of nerddom in baseball, which has helped ruin the game. So Billy Bean can screw. Joe on Sam Kennedy, hello.
Hey, guys, great show. I just wanted to bring out a point. So the ownership of the Red Sox, Mo, Larry, and Curley, they had to go out and hire Shemp, who is Sam Kennedy.
Right.
What the hell is doing? Is he just a smokescreen? I don't understand. Where are the owners? It's like they put this guy's face up in front of the camera.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there, Joe. But, he seems to be the face of it, of course. And I just thought that another thing that felt tone deaf to me was the little press conference that they did have in Tom Werner and John Henry that, again, no cameras. You can't live stream the thing. Like, what are you hiding from? It just feels like the whole thing was clandestine and it felt like they had something that they were trying to keep away from the public. At least that's the way
I mean, see, look, Sam's a really smart guy. He's a really accomplished guy. A lot of the players actually like Sam. But I think he's trying to sort of thread the public relations needle here, which is a tough spot to be in, which, again, you know, I thought that Monday press conference, honestly, was a little unnecessary. And you have him there sort of
It felt
of
like cleanup duty is what it was.
A little bit. Yeah, it did feel like a little bit like he's trotted out there to say, oh, you know, no, we're not going to cut payroll and we could keep Mookie and JD. And, you know, again, he did say it's difficult, but there's a path to it. And sure, there's a path to it. There's a path to me marrying Jessica Alba, but it's not going to happen, you know?
Derek and Peabody on the Red Sox. Go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. One of the ways the Red Sox can bail out is left field has been a hallowed position over the years. And Mookie is out of position in right field because you need a right fielder that can eat up ground. It's a lot of space to cover. It's a Dwight Evans type of player that you need out there. Build a team around Mookie, keep him, and that's it.
All right, Derek, I get it. Look, a lot of Red Sox fans feel that way. I know your colleague at the Globe, Chad Finn,
yes,
wrote, I think the column was, it would be akin to malpractice for the Red Sox if they were to move on from Mookie Betts this offseason, but it doesn't feel like he wants to be here long term. You know, that you have to factor that in.
Yeah, I mean, you know how I feel about this one. Look, Mookie's saying all the right things, but I look at it and I think, well, what else is he going to say? I mean, he still knows he could have to play here another year. So is he going to say, I don't like it here? Is he going to tell ownership, I don't want to play? What's he going to say? And also, the Red Sox could ultimately be one of the highest bidders for him. So why would you eliminate the Red Sox as a bidder? But again, I think actions speak louder than words. And I don't begrudge Mookie anything in terms of going out and getting as much money as he can get. But if his priority were remaining a Boston Red Sox, then I think this would be handled differently. Maybe he'll sign something this offseason, and that will be his priority. But he has to be able to read the tea leaves and know that where the team's at, he's going to have to take a little less to stay, and he doesn't seem inclined to do so. I don't have an issue with that, but I think if you're the team, you can't let the guy walk away for nothing. That, to me, is malpractice.
Well, my favorite thing of the week was a Felger faux pas when he was trying to pull off a live read just the other day. So I'll dance for Gasper next here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
And I should actually read this before I do this, shouldn't I? I'm sorry, the Havitron Toast and Focaccia.
Transformers, more than meets the eye. Autobots wage their battle to destroy the evil forces of the Decepticons, the Transformers.
Robots in disguise.
The Transformers, more than meets the eye. The Transformers.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports. Boy, was Chris tickled pink at this Felger faux pas from earlier this week. So there was only a portion of it, and we'll rerun it here. For those that weren't listening to Felger and Maz this week, Mike is lucky enough to be doing a lot of endorsements right now and get some side money, endorse some of the great sponsors we have here at the Sports Hub, one of which is Del Frisco's. Del Frisco's, the steakhouse they got in Burlington and in the Seaport. And boy, did he butcher the read. It's one of my favorite things occasionally when he does a read and I feel like, are you having a stroke? There was one for My Pillow a couple of years ago that's maybe one of my favorite moments since I've been working on the show where what should have been a 60-second read, I think, was close to 4 minutes. And it sounded like he was having a nervous breakdown. And then a couple of days ago, because of, the copy tripped him up and what he was supposed to be saying was Havarti on, Havarti cheese on focaccia. And it sounded like he was mentioning a Decepticon that doesn't exist. Havitron. So here's part of that read again.
And I should actually read this before I do this, shouldn't I? I'm sorry, the Havitron Toasted Focaccia? No. I mispronounced that. I'm sorry, yeah. Del Frisco's. I'll get it right. But the Toasted Focaccia, it's supposed to be awesome.
Yeah, so and the list of Decepticons, you have Megatron, who was the gun, Starscream, who was the jet, Shockwave, who was the purple gun that was one of the better Decepticons.
Yes. And Shockwave has one eye.
And Havitron, who was the toasted appetizer. Quite delicious. When he transforms, becomes a robot, but when he's just laying there in front of you, it's a delicious treat that you can get at Del Frisco's. Like, how do you screw that up? That Havitron, sworn enemy of Optimus Prime. You couldn't have texted me fast enough. It's never about a sports take. If it's an 80s reference that reminds you of your childhood, bang, you're just there. I know, man. That text is coming in.
Oh, yeah, I was texting. I don't know if we have the sound from you, but you made it. It wasn't just Felger butchering it. It was your immediate reaction to be like, Havitron, what's that? It was like so great.
I don't have the full clip, but they had retweeted it too on NBC Sports Boston on the Felger and Maz page too, but yeah, it's like Havitron immediately, because I, like you, loved all the Transformers, especially the Decepticons, and it just sounded like, it immediately reminded me of one of the bad guys.
Well, I was like, Havitron, I was like, was he a combiner, like Devastator? Right. Was he the arch enemy of Omega Supreme? And then I started saying, I think he fought Ultra Magnus, Havitron. It was great. I'm not just saying this now, people. This is an actual text I sent to you while he was on the air. Like, I could not get enough of it. And then I actually texted you, I think, the fact that we started talking about the Transformers movie, which was how young Chris learned about death. That was an incredibly graphic, sad movie. Really not age appropriate for who they were marketing to at the time.
So I think that came out in the summer of 85, if I recall, around that time, 85, 86. And that movie was actually pretty dark. It wasn't much of a kid's movie. It blew my mind. Like, that's how you learned about death. Then thankfully you were that young, not losing a grandparent or anyone like that. No, it's the Transformers that taught Chris Casper.
Yeah, Optimus Prime dying. And I was like, wait, he's coming back, right? And then everyone's crying. I'm like, what's going on here? Wait, he's dead?
Yeah.
So dead.
That's not how it is in the usual daily cartoon. They shoot lasers and come right back to life,
G.I. Joe. G.I. Joe. Yeah, no one gets hurt in, G.I. Joe.
That era of toys, though, if there's one thing my mom ended up being right about, when I was in, it was by the time I got into high school, where, money and beers and trying to get laid became the most important thing,
old Jay Gruden, basically.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So I, like, a very spoiled child. I had all the G.I. Joes, and I had all the Transformers. And my mother, for whatever reason, was, very forward-thinking in that this stuff was going to be worth money someday, which I didn't see. I was like, okay, my stupid toys. Like, who cares? And there was a small market for them at the time. And I sold, all of that stuff. And when I tell you I had all of it, including the USS flag, which Chris always
blows my mind.
You mentioned Devastator.
You had Devastator?
Oh, I had it all, Chris. I was very spoiled.
Did you have Omega Supreme?
I did, yeah.
You had Omega Supreme?
Young Fat Jimmy got it all. Whatever.
Are you serious?
Yes. Yeah, I had it all. And I sold it all for, $300. go to eBay and, like, even if the stuff's not, I mean, I didn't keep it packaged. I wasn't that kind of a nerd. A nerd, yes, but not that kind of a nerd. Where it's like, it has to be in pristine condition. No. I had all this stuff.
Rodrigo Blankenship.
And I kept it in good condition. And it's not like I was, like, outside smashing it and playing in the rain or whatever. But I had it all. I sold it all for, like, $300 combined. And my mom told me at the time, whenever that was, like, late 80s, early 90s, she's like, you'll live to regret this. Like, beer money. And now it's like you look up any of the stuff, G.I. Joe, like, names, like, you know, Destro, whatever, out of the package. And it's just, it's worth so much money now. Oh, so stupid. So
How
dumb.
Much is Omega Supreme worth? I mean, again, another, I didn't know anyone who owned Omega Supreme.
Yeah, I have.
I mean, it took like 40 minutes to transform him.
Yeah. Omega Supreme.
My only disappointment while Jim's looking that up was that you did not drop a Rodimus Prime into... You could be like, you know, the Del Frisco's, get the Rodimus Prime rib. Oh, you definitely could have dropped one of those in there on that Felger Reed.
Oh, so maybe this isn't as much as I thought, unless these are new.
Don't
but still,
feel
like
so bad,
$300.
Yeah.
Okay, so Omega Supreme working mint in box, 1985, $375. So that's not as much as I thought it would be. But yeah, I had this thing. I remember this thing.
I can't believe you had Omega Supreme.
Very, very spoiled.
Man, you had all the toys. I wish we had been friends with you when we were young. Oh, my God.
All right, so I just wanted to dance for Chris a little bit.
Thank you for indulging me.
Anytime.
I appreciate it.
So there's an update on the Patriots and their offense. Someone is not going to be playing. Trying to get to the bottom of this. Joe Murray's going to get caught up here, I believe, in the update. And we'll come back that the Patriots are going to be short another weapon that I thought they were going to get back this weekend. So get you caught up in that. We'll come right back here. No commercials. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 Sports Hub.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing. And FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks. And all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all 6 world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at Boston Scores.org/Noah.